You said that Juan used theta, right, for the parameters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the Boltzmann machine. So today we're going to talk about training and testing. Training and, no, not testing. I'll say sampling or reconstruction. Okay, so training is the act of tuning the parameters so that the marginalized distribution is the same as the distribution that underlies the data set. Okay, so I said this last time. So for training, assume you have a data set. I'll call it S, composed of a whole bunch of vectors, of images, or whatever you call it, of size L. So maybe there's 10,000 Ising configurations in that data set. And training means adjusting the weights and biases of the Boltzmann machine. Right, so these are all your WIJs. These are your biases on the visible. These are your biases on the hidden Cs. Okay, so assume you have this data set, and then training is, and it's drawn from the underlying distribution that I called Q. Q of X. And training is adjusting those parameters so that the marginalized distribution is as close as possible to Q of X. And I'm going to use V and X interchangeably. I should have maybe used V here. Because the data is only basically affecting the the visible units. Okay, so S is equal to V or X. So let's use V. So the marginalized distribution is, okay, so this is basically just review. It's what I said last time. Z lambda, sum over H, E minus E lambda, which depends on V and H, right? Good. So that thing is as close as possible to Q of X. So I'll say Q of V and the closer your Q is to the marginalized distribution, the better your training has done. Okay? Then, after training's done, we're going to reconstruct or sample or generate, you know, what do I call it there? Sample, reconstruct, generate. And what that means is that the machine is sampled in order to produce new versions of visible configurations. this is kind of the analogy to finding out, a user rating on a movie in that Netflix challenge, sort of. It's like generating a new, configuration or a new visible unit that's never been seen before. And what we'll show is that you can also sample hidden units in this case. So the RBM, this is important. When we draw samples from the RBM, we draw it from the stationary distribution of the machine, which is the joint distribution. Joint PVH. Okay. And we're going to use these samples drawn from the joint distribution not to make a recommendation system or something like that, but we're going to use them as physical estimators. Okay. So in this reconstruction phase, we're going to ask, what use are these generated samples? And the answer is that estimators can be calculated. Estimators are, I'm talking about Monte Carlo estimators of expectation values. So for example, for some operator Q, or some observable, then an expectation value, where those angle brackets are defined over the full joint distribution of the machine. So I would say P, this is actually P lambda, right? So I could say P lambda VH, just to be complete. Something like this. Some over visible, some over hidden. Q P V H. So you can imagine defining something like an energy of a machine, a magnetization of a machine. Since the binary units V and H can be used to essentially define an observable like that, a susceptibility, a specific heat, all those types of things, right? So you might ask why this is useful, and it's not obvious, but what is useful would be an observable that just spans the visible units of the machine, okay? So we can restrict the definition of Q so that, Q visible written as the expectation value drawn from the joint distribution, right, would be 1 over Z lambda. Same expression. But now, Q can be contained, can be pulled out of the sum over H. So what remains in H is just P lambda V H, right? This thing is the full joint distribution of the restricted Bolson machine. Marginalized, or whatever you want to call it. Traced over all hidden units. And we know what that thing is. This thing here is just P lambda V, right? But in the training step, what we've done is adjusted the parameters so that this P lambda is as close as possible to the distribution that underlies the data. So P of lambda, hopefully, is a good approximation for Q, which is like the, say, Boltzmann distribution that underlies the Ising model data, or it could be the, you know, square root of the wave function or something like that in a Born approximation or Born rule. Right? So what this turns into is an essentially a physical expectation value or an approximate expectation value of something like, you know, say this is the, you know, say Q is the original Hamiltonian or something. Or maybe a magnetization. Specific heat, susceptibility. And now since Z of lambda, what did I do? I wrote it over there somewhere. Is sum over visible, sum over hidden of the joint distribution. I could also just write this as sum over visible of the marginalized distribution P lambda V, if you will. So then this thing looks like a regular expectation value, or is an approximation of the original expectation value over Q, right? So this thing is small Q. So this thing is like Q, V, Q, right? The physical distribution that underlies. So that's our strategy. Going forward, that's what we're doing. We're taking data in that set S over visible units. We're training the restricted Boltzmann machine. Once the restricted Boltzmann machine is trained on that data, the marginalized distribution is as close as possible to the physical distribution that's unknown, right, in principle. And then we're going to generate new samples from the machine, and we're going to calculate these types of expectation values on the samples. Okay? Questions on that? So now we're going to dive into training. And what training is going to show us is why we've chosen the machine to be restricted. It's going to show us why we didn't use a hop field network or something like that. So when you train a restricted Boltzmann machine, you don't have, this isn't supervised learning, it's unsupervised learning. So you don't have a set of labels that lets you make a cost function that looks like a mean squared error or cross entropy or something like that. I don't remember. What did you guys use? Cross entropy? Yeah. So you don't have that. So forget it. So what you need is a cost function that somehow measures the difference between this and this, because that's what you're trying to minimize, is the difference or the distance between those two distributions. One that underlies the data and one that comes from the probabilistic graphical model that is the machine itself. So we're finding a set of parameters. Okay, so let me put it this way. between P and Q. So we're imagining in our head somehow that we have Q, and then we have some other distribution. I don't know what it looks like, P of lambda. And we're slowly optimizing the parameters so that these two things overlap as much as humanly possible, or non-humanly possible. And remember, Q is unknown, right? Q is just the distribution that underlies the data. So we do that by minimizing something called the Kullback-Leibler divergence. Or KL divergence. And I'll write that over here. So I'll just call it KL. I've got sum over all. I'm going to call it V's, I think. I'll just write in general for some general X. Q of X log Q of X over, say, P. Okay, this is general for any Q or P. And what we're going to do is use the Q and P the way I've been defining them. Oh yeah, that's really inconvenient. Hopefully you can see that. Let me write it a different way. So KL, I'll write it over here. For us, you know, X is visible. Drawn from the set. S, which I defined up there, and Q is unknown. Underlies the data set. And P is P lambda. So the Kullback-Leibler divergence is a measure of a distance between two distributions. You can also think of it as a relative entropy. You know, it's like, this is the entropy of basically the data set here. And this is a entropy, well, this is the relative entropy piece that changes it into a relative entropy. It's always positive. If you get it so that those two distributions overlap, then it's zero. That's what you want for a cost function. Because you're going to do gradient descent with this, right? So then if that overlap if the cost is zero, that's what you're basically aiming for. That's the solution to the optimization problem. Okay. It's always positive. Or zero if P equals Q. The first term is the entropy of the data set. And the second term here, because you have P of lambda, is the piece that needs to be optimized. So when you calculate the gradient, you just need to worry about this piece, essentially. I'll just say second term contains the parameters. What else? Right. This X is drawn from Q, right? So it's a sum over, say Bayesian configurations or pictures of cats. This is the distribution that you want, right? So an X is drawn from this distribution. This just looks like an expectation value. That's what that notation means, basically up there. So you can approximate this, or if your set S is somehow, where's S? If your S is spans the entire state space, if it's a proper trace, then that's an exact expression for the expectation value of log P, in that ensemble, if you will, or in that distribution. So approximate the expectation value of log P over Q, right, by the training samples. S, V1, V2, V, what did I say, small l maybe? And then that second term can be written as something like, so it'd be like sum over, what am I going to say, V log P of V. And I can call that log of L, where L is the likelihood. Okay. So that's the log likelihood. And the log likelihood is something that you talk about with Juan. Minimizing or maximizing. So what do you want to do? You want to minimize the KL divergence. There's a minus sign there. So what you want to do is you want to maximize the log likelihood. Does that make sense? So that's it. That's the strategy. We take the log likelihood, which is just the second term of the KL divergence, the one with the parameters in it, and we need to find an expression for the gradient with respect to the parameters, the things I just erased, the weights and biases. Questions? Does that make sense? So basically, the problem of training becomes the problem of calculating that gradient and whether or not it can be done efficiently. And the point of the restricted Boltzmann machine is we'll see how those restricted, hidden, invisible units make it necessary basically to get an efficient training algorithm. So just a quick note, I guess. Training is done by stochastic so you would pick a mini batch out of S We'll talk about that later. For every single element either in that S, set S, or in the mini batch, which is much smaller than S, what you'll want to do is calculate the gradient of the log likelihood. So, okay, so then the gradient. Of the negative log likelihood, if you want. And that gives you, Juan wrote this with thetas, I guess. But the update rule for lambda, I don't know how to write it. It's just something like this, delta KL. Okay, so just don't lose track of what you're going for. And this is the learning rate here. Okay, so this you've seen before. So let's consider log of L. And let's give it a training example. So one of the V from the set S. Okay, and we'll calculate the gradient. Log L, I don't know, what am I doing? Log V, P of V. So there's lambdas on this P, but I'm kind of being lazy. So I'm going to drop them now. Let's just, keep in mind that this is log of P. Right, and so this is log 1 over Z. This is Z lambda. We're calculating the partition function of the machine. Sum over H. E to the minus E. This is E lambda. But it depends on V and H. Keep that in mind. So there's two terms, right? There's the partition function, and this is going to cause you all your problems, always, right? And then there's this sum here. So this is log of the sum. I'll do that term first. And then minus log of the partition function, sum over V and H, right? E to the minus E, V, H. So the first term in that expression turns out to be something that can be calculated efficiently. So just to make a long story short. And the second term that comes from the partition function gives you something that's essentially intractable. Just like calculating a partition function normally is. Let's look at the gradient. So I'll just write it as partial log L partial lambda. But we'll do the specific example of the weights, because lambda is weights and biases, right? So let me just write it in general first, and then we'll substitute like Wij. Because what we have to do is we have to take the derivative of the energy, which I erase, but is, you know, has an Ising-like term, Wij Vihj. And so that's going to be somehow what gets pulled out of the derivative. I'm going to get lazy with my vectors and stuff too here. This is log sum over V H minus E. Okay, so take this derivative. Okay, there's a log here. So what that gives you is sum over, let's see, minus, I'm going to say, E to the minus E. And then the derivative of V with respect to lambda. So that's what you have to calculate based on your energy function. That's the first term. The second term. Is minus and minus gives me a plus. So that's VH E to the minus E. VH E to the minus E partial E partial lambda. Can you see that? The board didn't erase all that great. Now this expression here can be written in terms of a conditional. So note, so let's see, P, H condition on V. Remember from last class, VH over V. Right, and this is full expression with the partition function. Right? So I've marginalized the distribution. I've partially traced out hidden units to get this. And here is just the full joint probability distribution. And the z's cancel. So I get e to the minus e over sum over h e to the minus e. So I can use that to write this piece here in terms of a conditional probability. That's basically the lesson there. So then log, so derivative of log likelihood L over with respect to lambda, sum over H, P, H conditioned on V. What? Sorry for crowding this. And then that's minus and then plus the other term, which is going to be, okay, so that's a partition function, right? So what I have there is basically a probability distribution. So it's the joint distribution. So it's plus sum over VH joint distribution and then the derivative. Okay, that was too important to cram down here, so let me just what is that line for? So it's two terms. It's like the expectation value, if you will, of the derivative of the energy with respect to the full joint distribution, which you can model. It's the model distribution. It's the, you know, it's what comes from the Boltzmann machine. This one here is a similar looking expectation value, but you take the expectation value with respect to a conditional probability distribution. Because of the way conditionals look, you know. So the first term is computationally easy. It's tractable. And we'll derive that now. That has to do with the structure of the restricted Boltzmann machine. Whereas the second term is not. And so the second term requires some sort of strategy, some creativity in order to get efficient training. And we'll probably talk about that next class. Let me just write this in a different way. So the gradient that you're going to calculate, it's log. So it's something like do I have my negatives and positives right here? Yeah, negative. So it's negative, the expectation value, this is what I said, over the conditional. The conditional distribution of H given the visible unit. So sometimes you say you clamp the visible units to the data set. And from that clamped variable, you calculate a conditional probability. So that's what we're going to have to calculate. We're going to have to calculate that conditional probability. And then you're adding to it the partial over the model, over the full joint distribution. So that's like any expectation value. In some sense. Okay, so let's look again at let me just look at the factor graph. So let's calculate the conditional, this piece here. Okay. Right, so when you have visibles and hiddens, and there's no connections between the visibles and no connections between the hiddens, so you only have connections between the layers. Whatever. Then the variables, each variable is independent when you do this conditional probability, basically. So the conditional probabilities factor. So P, H, V. So I was sloppy over here. I didn't write any of the arrows indicating that these are vectors. But because of this, remember there's N hidden units. N hidden. And here there's M visible. Then I can write the conditional probability factored like this. And similarly for the conditional probability of a visible given a hidden. I equals 1 to M now, P, visible, I, given a hidden unit. So that's nice. If you know if you look at one unit, this one here, and you want to know the probability of that being a 0 or a 1, then all you need to know is the state of the H's, and you don't care what the state of the other visibles are. That it all factors out because of the connectivity. So I'm not going to calculate today the form of that individual conditional probability. We can do that Monday. But it's a sigmoid function. It's the same sigmoid function that you've seen in feed-forward neural networks. So the sigmoid has a different interpretation in the Boltzmann machine. It's not the activation function. It's the rate of firing of a stochastic neuron. So they call these Boltzmann machines stochastic neural networks because of this. But we'll calculate this analytically. Okay, for a hidden unit I, the conditional probability is a sigmoid Wij visible for all J, summed over all visibles, plus C of I. And conversely, for V, I equals 1 H, the sigmoid, now it sums to N, weights H plus B, J, this should be J then. So that's J, I've summed over I, BJ, and where sigmoid is 1 over 1 plus e to the minus z. You've seen that before, right? Sigmoids? So let's just assume we know some analytical form, and I'll call it sigma. So let's calculate the first term. Which is like the expectation value. Of the derivative of the energy with respect to that conditional probability, P H V. Oh, H conditioned on V, sorry. Okay? And let's do it for some example. So let's now pick lambda to be the weights. So some weight, you know, back in the neural network, maybe here, there's some weight Wij. Wij. Okay. So that's lambda, it's Wij. And then you'd have to do the same for the weights and biases. Okay, so sum over, what am I doing? So that term right here. I'll start from this expression. Sum over H, P, H, V, partial E, partial weight I, J. And I know how to take that derivative. At least I did when I wrote these notes. So that's HIVJ, because that's determine the energy. And this piece is sum over a product, right? So it's just sum over a factored product right there. Let me use some other, let me call it K. K equals 1 to N. Conditional PHK. And then V HI VJ. Okay, so we have three indices now. K here, which will sometimes be I, right? Or no. One of those products will be equal to I. And then you don't care about V necessarily. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to treat that one element in this product that's the same as this special. And this is the entire trick with the restricted bolts machines right here. Okay, so at the risk of running out of room here. Okay, I'll write one expression here. So we're gonna have to take the trace of this. Okay, so I'm gonna introduce some weird notation. Let me just introduce the notation here. So I'm gonna call introduce. So I'm gonna say H vector of minus I. There's probably a better way to do this, is, all the elements of H of the vector minus or with HI removed. That's just some weird notation. Okay, so that expression, I'm not gonna write it again, is sum over, I'm gonna factor things, right? So I'm gonna have sum over HI, sum over everything else, HI minus I, P HI conditional on V, P, this is like I've collapsed everything in that product except for one element. I've pulled one element out. HI, and it's the special one, VJ. And these are traces, right? You're tracing over all the possible states of H. Okay, so this is like that product. It's like that factorized product except I've pulled out one thing. So that's what that notation means. Oh, you get it. So what's the trace? It's the only thing you have to know how to do in StatMech. So it's a sum over HI is what, 0 and 1. And the sum over all H's in that set minus I equals 0 and 1. Right? So then this expression here gives something that, let me just do them carefully. So this trace here H minus I P H minus I B. Right. So that thing is like, you know, every element of that thing gives you something that's like P H 1 equals 0 B plus P H 1 equals 1 V. Right? So that's like the first element of the trace. Right? And then there's a whole bunch of products of those elements. So it's a, what's the, what do you, you know, what is that when you add these two probabilities? It's gotta be one, right? So it's a product of a bunch of ones. So this whole thing just equals one. And that's basically the trick with the restricted Bolson machine. That's the main reason that it's restricted there. So what you're left with is just simply, you know, this trace here, which is simple to do, with just I. This is the same as this one, HIVJ, right? And that is P, let's see, HI equals 1 V times 1 plus P HI equals 0 conditioned on V times 0 times V of J. So it's just P HI equals 1, whatever that is, V and VJ. And you know what that is, because I wrote it right here. So it's a sigmoid function, which we'll derive next time. Yep. Okay. So how else, let me write down what I've done here. So sum over H, P, H, V. This is an example of just the weights. Now, this is the sigmoid function. Or you could just call it sigma without knowing what's inside here. J C I, that's right. V J. Okay. So that's important to know. We're gonna use it next time. It's, you know, you have this sum in the sigmoid function, and that's it, basically. You just need to know the value of the clamped variable or the visible variable, which in principle comes from the data. So you feed in all this data. You have one element VJ, right? And so there's a weight connecting VJ to HI, and that's the first term of the gradient for the update rule for that weight.
So do you usually pick hidden units so that there is 0, 1?
Say it again.
You usually pick the hidden units so that they have value 0, 1?
Yeah, in this type of Bolson machine, yeah. You'd have to rework all this with ones and zeros. Because this would change here, right? Or sorry, ones and minus ones. So I just want to mention the other term, then we're done. That's the expectation value of, you know, the energy derivative over the joint distribution You can imagine pulling out, you know, V, the marginalized distribution, and the conditional to get something that factors in the same nice way. You could do that either way, or you could do it H, P of H, sum over V, conditional the other way, V conditioned on H, like that. Either one of those works. In either case, the inner sum can be factorized. Oops, factorized. So like this one or this one. But you're still left with the outer sum. You know, which is sum over H or sum over V, which is 2 to the M or 2 to the N states, right? So the second term is still basically intractable in this sense that you have to perform a trace, you know, for every weight that you want to update or for every bias. You would have to perform that full trace over all states in the hidden or visible unit, depending how you factorize it. Okay, so that looks like it kills the Boltzmann machine. I mean, the reason that the Hopfield networks and the full Boltzmann machines don't work, essentially work, is that you have these types of intractable traces all, you know, everywhere that you can't get rid of, right? So the trick with the restricted Boltzmann machine, I mean, is this, which gets rid of the, you know, difficult trace for that one term. But in the second term, you still have to calculate this expectation value here. So what we'll talk about next time is the approximate way that this is done. And this is basically one of the big breakthroughs, I think, that came from Hinton's lab or Hinton's group. Which is called contrastive divergence. So we'll talk about that. But there's other strategies that people are thinking about, and one of them is actually a hardware sampler. So Fujitsu is building a hardware sample, like an FPGA Ising model. And the idea is that you swap out basically, you know, just this piece when you do these types of generative models, and you take samples that are produced really quickly from hardware. Yeah, so that's how important this type of training is to people.
So you say Hinton group also made this.
Hinton, what I'll do next time is contrastive divergence, which is an approximation for this expectation value that works. And it works in the same, it's kind of the same philosophy of stochastic gradient descent. It's like, what do you care if you don't calculate this thing accurately? Really, you know? All you want is the gradient. And you want that gradient to go downhill most of the time, but if sometimes it goes the wrong way, who cares, right? It's just like a fluctuation. On Wednesday, in Tishby's colloquium, which is here at 2 p.m., Tishby will talk about stochastic gradient descent. His whole talk is about stochastic gradient descent in the training of feedforward neural networks, essentially. And, you know, his thesis is many things. It's basically a bound on generalization errors. But he basically, you know, his claim or his thesis is that you need stochasticity in the gradient descent in order to get what he calls these two different phases of learning. So some people think that this kind of noise, if you want to call it that, in the gradient descent is actually really crucial for learning. And what Hinton showed is that if you do this really sloppy, like really, really sloppy, it basically gives you good characteristics of learning. And so when you do your tutorials, you'll use that sloppy, you know, mess that they call contrastive divergence. So Monday we have a lecture at 9. What else do you have? Everett's talk at 2.
And then another lecture at 3:45.
Everett's talk's going to be good. It's going to be on recurrent networks.
Cool.
and how he uses that to classify physics data, basically. And it was his is the first example of using recurrent neural networks to look at, you know, dynamical quantities. And you'll see it's really simple. It's like what you learn in this class, you know, plus a little bit of work, and you're submitting papers to, you know, wherever he's getting papers in Nature Physics. I don't know. Tishby's thing is more like statistical learning theory. It's much more about kind of the nitty-gritty of why stochastic gradient descent works, or why these types of approximation methods. You know, the big unknown question in deep learning is why deep, you know? Why did deep learning work so much better than all these shallow methods? And so basically that's what Tishby's chasing. All right, so next week's busy.
What about all these research on adversarial networks and counter examples to...
Yeah, so adversarial networks are nice because it's like you don't have to think as much about this, right? You basically just have these two networks fight. And so you have to come up with some sort of cost. You're trying to fool one network, which is generating. You know, it's generating images of cats. And then you have a classifier that's trying to discriminate between real images of cats and the generated images. So the idea with the adversarial networks, I think kind of very broadly, is the idea that you don't have to think about, oh, I should minimize a KL divergence, or I should minimize a cross entropy or something like that. You let the networks fight it out. So they in principle tell you what's the best cost. Yeah, so it would replace, I don't have time for that, but you know, it basically replaces derivation with something that's the machine has derived. That's like meta learning.